This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To talk about the early season, some of the trends and what we're seeing, we bring in Dave Lennon, baseball columnist from Newsday. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Lori, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks. So, wanted to get you right in on just a couple of big picture stories. One is, I had a caller that was asking about, is scoring up so far early in this season compared to what, I mean, it's only, we're a week and a half in, but some of these scores, what the Red Sox did tonight, the Yankees the other day, and the caller's point was, is this torpedo bats? Is this a juice baseball? Is this lousy pitching? But does it seem like for the first week and a half of the season that the hitters are a little further along than we're used to seeing at this point in a season?
Well, not for anybody that's been watching the Mets.
I did say that, too.
The Mets are providing a pretty good counterpoint to that argument now. I don't know the stats exactly. There was a number that I saw the other day that was comparing the number of home runs that were being hit and the pace the league was on. And it seemed like the pace was pretty much almost in line with the kind of the juice ball year of 2019, a little slower than that, but that was the one they were using as a comparison. I don't remember what the exact numbers were on it, but so the home runs were up on that sort of pace. Again, it's an extremely small sample size, but at this time of year, especially in the Northeast, as we know, being in New York, the weather has not been very conducive to hit it. You would think with 45 degree temperatures, rain most of the nights we've had here and some wind. So I think it's something to watch as the season goes on. I think certainly with the Yankees, they've been hitting a ton of home runs. And you look at a guy like Volpe who has four homers already and an OPS over 1,000 at this point. So, yeah, there are some interesting trends here to watch. But at this point, when we're talking about nine games into a season, it's very difficult to draw too many conclusions.
Look, to your point, yeah, the Yankees are hitting the tar off the ball, and a number of teams have been potent offenses. The Mets, on the other hand, so far, yes. So the Yankees leading baseball in OPS so far this season. The Mets are sitting there at number 23 overall. So I'm not sure what that says for, by the way, if you're the Atlanta Braves and you're last at this point, I don't know what you're making of that, but the Mets, as bad as it's been, are 23 overall in OPS so far. But yeah, the Mets have struggled to score runs. When you look at let's start with Juan Soto because he is the biggest story there. What are you seeing from Soto so far, and how close to a breakout do you think he is?
Well, I mean, there are plenty of times I've seen him hit the ball hard, and it's been at people. He's been drawing some walks. He's got 7 walks already on the season. So this is not the time to sign any, to
I don't think anyone's panicked. Yes, I don't think no one should be, I think, panicked about Soto. And is it safe to say just in general the Mets offense? I mean, coming into the season, I thought, all right, the Mets lineup and the offense is going to be good. Will there be enough pitching, in particular starting pitching? Have they done enough? And so far, of course, in the way of baseball, it's been the exact opposite of what I expected.
Right.
Because that's what baseball does to us. But But starting with that offense, which big picture I'm not terribly concerned, but Juan Soto, I guess after last year with the Yankees, seemed to be a player who was almost above having the struggles of most mortals. And yet it does seem, I'm not sure if it's the burden of the contract. He had a decent opening series in Houston, but he looks like he's pressing to me. He looks like a guy who's sometimes up there trying to hit home runs. And yet that last at bat today when he hit a double. So I'm just wondering, like, how close does he look to being the Soto we're used to seeing?
Well, I think for people in New York, you know, we watched Soto very closely last year because he was playing for the Yankees. You know, when guys aren't playing for the Yankees, chances are you don't see them quite as much. And Soto had an incredible year last year. I mean, he started quick out of the gate. And I looked at this the other day. I don't think there was any point of last year when he was playing for the Yankees that his average ever dipped down any lower than 285.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened like much later in the season. For most of the first half of the season, he was hitting over 300. So it didn't dip down until later. I think he finished at 288 on the year or something along those lines. So, you know, when he started off the Mets here, now we see him at 250. You know, we're not used to seeing him kind of in the 200s. You know, it's nine games. But I think you're not too far off with the pressing thing. I asked him specifically after that game in Houston where he struck out to end it that, you know, he chased the pitch, you know, that was in the other dugout.
Yep.
And that's not like him. You know, if there's anything you know about Juan Soto, it's his incredible mastery of the strike zone. And for him to go chasing like that made me think, here's a guy that really wants to do something, you know, in his first couple games with his new team, gigantic contract, you know, the whole thing. And that's where I really noticed it. Beyond that, you know, I think he's settled in a little bit more. You know, we haven't seen him, you know, knocking the ball around, but nobody in that lineup has. I mean, if you look at the top of their lineup, Lindor's at 172. Then you have Soto at 250. Alonso's the star of this whole crew. He's hitting 290 right now. Nimmo's 235. And, you know, don't even get started on the bottom half of this lineup because that's just a wasteland until McNeil or Alvarez get back. So, yeah, I just think that the lineup as a whole has had some difficulty getting going here. I think they will. But I don't think you're far off in saying that there are the pressures of a new team with very high expectations and a gigantic contract, that $765 million deal that's on Soto's shoulders right now.
Now, you mentioned Pete, who is at the moment the star of the lineup, hitting 290, and it does seem to be, we're nine games in, so it's super early, but at least at the moment, this seems to be a version of Pete with a little better pitch recognition, and not fishing for, there are times last season, you know, flailing at pitches that were so far out of the strike zone that I think frustrated himself, the Mets, you know, Mets brass and Mets fans. So the question is, how much is this sustainable? How much of this is small sample size?
I mean, this is a good version of Alonso as far as plate discipline and being locked in as I've seen him have. This is very early in the season. We are talking about nine games like we keep mentioning. But even the outs right now, Laurie, are hit very hard. I mean, he had another shot today when Soto was on second base after his double, and it was just a line shot to left field. So even when he's making outs right now, this had a high exit velo on what he's hitting. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great indication for him. He's already drawn six walks, too. He's got 11 RBIs on the year. So I think with Pete, last year, there was a lot of pressure on him for the walk year, clearly. Maybe because he's already been through that, and he's kind of been through that dark period and come out the other side, that maybe there is kind of a freedom to that. You know, maybe he's like, you know what? I put myself under so much pressure last year that I can't be any harder on myself than I was. I'm just going to go out, focus, concentrate, do what I do, put in the work, which Alonso always does. And I think you're kind of seeing the results of that now. I mean, he's not giving away a single pitch during these at-bats. And, We've seen Pete at his best in previous years, certainly not last year. That wasn't one of his better years. So we know what he's capable of. And I think this is shaping up to be, from the early signs anyway, to be one of those big years for Pete Alonso again.
Maybe the only other, besides Luis Torrens, who's been very good, the other bright spot for the Mets offensively has been Jesse Winker. And in all your time covering the Mets and even the Yankees, has there been a player with this type of storyline? Somebody who was a little bit of a villain, having fun with a fan base, then comes in and suddenly is playing for this fan base, and the appreciation and joy for being here and what he brings to the team. I'll throw a name out. I mean, they're very, very different people, wildly different people, but there's almost a little bit of, in the way that Nick Swisher was so happy to be a Yankee, I don't know if I've seen a player so happy to be a New York Met more than Jesse Winker.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about villains, what about Johnny Damon?
Yeah.
That was the guy that came over and kind of reestablished himself here. But yeah, I mean, Winker does bring that kind of character and energy and, you know, the kind of guy that really rubs opponents the wrong way, you know, when he's out there. And, you know, the Mets admit that. I remember asking Mendoza a couple of times if, you know, Winker was the kind of guy that the players in the opposing dugout are just, you know, hating, you know, when he's out in the base pass, you know, or in the batter's box just doing what he does. And, you know, and Mendoza would smile and kind of acknowledge it to some degree without really saying it. But yeah, he's the kind of guy that brings a different dimension. You know, I don't know if glue guy is the right word or just somebody that's kind of a spark plug and really kind of brings, you know, the rest of the team to life. I think the Mets do have a good culture and they do have a good group of high energy guys on there. But Winker is a little bit different and I think does bring that special quality. And you saw that last night and what he brought to the team in their comeback victory. So yeah, he's become a very valuable player, and I was surprised that the Mets really acted so quickly to bring him back. I think that really spoke to the impact that they felt he made for them last year in their run in October.
Talking to Dave Lennon about the Mets, the Yankees, and you mentioned Carlos Mendoza, Mets manager Carlos Mendoza, and he went with his hunch last night, kept Jesse Winker in there to face the lefty in a big spot. Winker hits the triple. It worked out, went with his gut. The flip side is there have been a couple of curious pitching decisions so far this season. And I get that every manager is trying to leave starters in to try and get some more length to save their bullpens. But were you surprised today with David Peterson was in there in the fifth inning? And clearly there was something wrong. We found out later that he just, I guess, wasn't feeling well, but that Peterson was not right. And it's, you know, there are two runners on. There's clearly something off with him, and yet he was left in the game.
Yeah, Mendoza dodged a big bullet today, Laurie. I mean, us watching the press box today and seeing that inning develop, we were like, what are they doing? You know, I mean, the game is really kind of hinging on that inning.
Yeah.
Peterson is hunched over, you know, leaning on his knees. We don't know what's wrong with him at that point. Clearly something serious, though. Gets up on the mound, throws a warm-up toss, says and he's good to go.
The warm-up toss, by the way, I didn't think it was very convincing.
No. So he stays in, walks Santander on five pitches. Hefner comes out again, and we figure he's gone at that point. Stays with him still. And then he hits Jimenez with the very next pitch. Finally, they take him out. They were extremely lucky that things didn't blow up that inning because, you know, Miracle Max Kranich came in and shut it down after that. But, yeah, Lori, I mean, that he was really playing with fire there. And he said after the game that, you know, I was trying to get some length, you know, out of the starters. I've been riding the bullpen pretty hard. I wanted to could squeeze to get him through Jimenez, the lefty. And it's like, Jimenez wasn't even the next guy up, you know? So I think that was very risky there.
Yes.
And he did get very lucky. I mean, Peterson, you know, he admitted later that he had blurry vision during that time, in addition to being nauseous and thinking he was going to throw up. That's not a guy you keep in the baseball game. I'm sorry.
Right. And if you're an opposing hitter, I mean, fortunately, he only got hit in the arm, Jimenez.
Right. Exactly. Who knows where that pitch could have wound up.
Yeah. If you're an opposing hitter and you find out afterwards the other guy, yeah, I had blurred vision, but they left him in. Not a problem.
Not good. Sometimes better to be lucky than good. And Mendoza did catch a lucky break. And yeah. The bullpen's been pitching great right now. And those kind of bullpens, you know, not only bail out the starting pitcher, but they can bail out the manager too.
Yeah. So which right now, yeah, going, as I said, going into the season, I thought the strength of this Mets team would be the lineup, and there were question marks about the pitching. Right now they have the best ERA in all of baseball, best starting pitching ERA in all of baseball. If I said to you, which Mets pitcher has been the biggest surprise so far for you, who would that be?
Well, biggest surprise, I mean, it might have to be Tyler McGill. Mm-hmm. Has actually pitched very well for them. And we never know what to make of McGill. You know, I mean, there are times he comes in and pitches well. He tends to fade maybe around the fifth inning. You know, we've seen plenty of it. We've already seen once this year where he's had three perfect innings going into the fourth, you know, with a no-hitter. So he's really looked good. You know, he had a good day on the home opener. On Friday too. So, you know, he's pitched really well, and this is really kind of a grab bag group of pitchers they have right now, that have all pitched pretty decent. So I think he's the guy that really stands out as the surprise. I mean, Senga, they're expecting big things out of, we'll see how that shakes out with him health wise. I think that Griffin Canning has pitched well for them. I think he can be a good asset. So I think that this rotation is kind of pitched, again, like they've hoped, like Stearns hoped, as he did last year, to get the ceiling out of these pitchers. And it seems like they give a lot of credit to the conditioning staff, the training staff, the pitching lab, you know, Hefner and his coaches, of really squeezing the best out of these guys. And I think that's where we're seeing early on. You know, they've really pitched a lot more to their ceiling than what we've seen from the past records from these guys.
Yeah, that was not something that we used to say about the New York Mets.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, players playing to their ceiling because that's what the Mets do. Like, oh, really?
Right.
We'll turn to the Yankees. And, well, sticking Mets and Yankees, I'll say this, is you saw that Edwin Diaz today, there was the Diaz that makes you worry, where you just don't know. He hit two batters, but somehow got out of the inning. That
right.
Edwin Diaz. Then we contrast to the Bronx, where it was in Pittsburgh today, but where the Yankees had their new closer in Devin Williams, who is, I mean, last season was one of the best closers in all of baseball. Of course, the Mets get to him in the playoffs, but like was one of the best closers in all of baseball. And he ends up being the losing pitcher in extra innings today and just has a little bit of a, I don't know, after the game, watching him in the post-game interview, there's a little deer in the headlights look there. And so I just wonder right now in terms of Devin Williams and the state of the Yankees, is, you know, is that a player where adjusting to New York, do we sometimes minimize the difference between, you know, even if he's pitched in the playoffs, pitching in Milwaukee versus having to face the New York media after you blow a game?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very real thing. I mean, the transition from a small marketplace like Milwaukee to pitching for the Yankees, you know, and it's not just, you know, facing the media right after the game. It's just the environment. I mean, when you're around the Yankees, you know, you're just under the magnifying glass all the time, you know, with the expectations on the team, the players around you. It's just a whole different atmosphere. And it's the rare occasion when you get people from a small marketplace and they can make a seamless transition. You know, you've heard Brian Cashman talk about it quite a bit of when that's a concern for him when he makes a trade or signs someone, that he tries to do as much, you know, background and due diligence he can about this player to know how he's going to adapt here. And there's no way to make it 100% certainty that you'll know. You know, sometimes it's just going to have to happen on the field. This isn't to say that Devin Williams is going to, you know, struggle for the first 2 months as a Yankee, but there are going to be instances. I think today was a tough day to pitch in. The conditions seem pretty rough, pitch and hit, for that matter, even though the Yankees did mount a pretty good comeback. So I just think that maybe it was one of those days. He admitted he just didn't have his best stuff. He didn't have good location. There can be a lot of things that can contribute to that, especially weather-wise. So I think that it will be something to watch. And it definitely comes into play, especially coming from a place like Milwaukee, no question about it.
One of the interesting stories of the Yankees so far, Trent Grisham is getting some more playing time. And look, he's not going to, you know, hit 455 all season. He's not going to have a 909 slugging percentage all season.
Right.
That's a bit of a small sample size. But
yes.
Is there a, you know, can you envision that with some more playing time that Trent Grisham actually has a much bigger and more important role for this Yankees team than maybe we expected coming into the season?
Well, I think the one thing many people pointed to with the Yankees coming into this season was the bench. They were going to want, people wondered what the depth was going to be like, and were they going to find people, you know, that could be productive players that were going to need to get some playing time here for them. And Grisham was one of those guys. I mean, he's really been under the radar for the most part and really kind of existed as a, you know, a late inning defensive replacement. And now he's turning in, you know, he's providing serious offense for this team. Now, if he gets more playing time, could he have more representative numbers than we've seen in the past? It's looking that way early. The track record for Grisham certainly isn't to be this kind of player. But the Yankees have put a lot of faith in him, you know, getting him in the first place and then bringing him back. So maybe there are signs in him that they see that he could be one of the productive guys for them. And to this point, you know, with the there's no denying the numbers and kind of what a contributor he's been to this point. So they'll take it because they just don't really have much depth at all behind the players that are currently starting for them.
And you mentioned Anthony Volpe and the hot start he's gotten off to, hitting .297, .366 on base, and the, you know, the .703 slug, the home runs, the, you know, OPS over 1,000, all of that. How much of this, you know, how much are you buying, you know, for Anthony Volpe and reasons for him to be breaking out as a hitter? How much of this is the torpedo bat? How much of this is a placebo effect where he believes that? You know, what's your interpretation of what we've seen so far from Volpe?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things that you mentioned, Lori. I do think, and he used the word the placebo effect maybe with the torpedo bat, mm-hmm. But I think there is something to the bat for him. You know, you've seen people talk about the way his swing is and how he tended to get jammed and he wanted to put, you know, concentrate more of the wood on the bat where he makes contact. And there was one home run in particular last week, that bomb he hit that went to the back of the Yankees bullpen. I think it was about 420 feet. And if you watch the pitch, it was on like the inner half of the plate and it was low. And if you watched him make contact, where he made contact was basically right in the hot zone of that torpedo bat. Mm-hmm. And that really made me think, you know what, there's something to that, for him at least. For the rest of the guys, I think there was another night I saw them go like, you know, 2 for 18 with 10 strikeouts, the torpedo bat crew. So that kind of cooled some of the conversation about it. Mm-hmm. But I think when I saw Volpe make contact that night, it hit the ball 420 feet, I was like, you know, maybe it's not just a placebo for him. Maybe there is a mechanical part to this. Maybe this does fit his swing. And if he has the confidence, if the bat is giving him more confidence and suited to his swing, maybe he becomes more of the offensive force that the Yankees were thinking. And we've seen him have the power, right? I mean, this is the guy that's hit 20 home runs in a season before. what they're worried about or what they were hoping that he would bring up is the average, and now that's back up after nine games. You know, he's hitting .295 or whatever it is. So that and the on base is up too. So that's all part of the confidence. The bat, I think, could help him in the power department and making harder contact. And I think we may see a little bit of it that translate into the numbers he's putting up so far.
All right. Look, I could keep talking Mets, Yankees, and baseball with you, but have to let you go. Really appreciate the time. Dave Lennon, you should be following him on social media and, of course, in reading him on Newsday, newsday.com. Dave, appreciate the time.
Anytime, Lloyd.